life. So, therefore, there's a verse in the 15th chapter which says, Gunan etan atityachin dehi dehasamud bhava. And it says, dehi dehasamud bhava. Janma mityu jara dukar vimukto mam amritam, which means, for the embodied person, if they can transcend the influence of the three modes of material nature, this sattvic, rajasic, and tamasic influence, and when which are associated with the material body. The material body is subjected to the influence of these three forces of nature. And if they can overcome the influence of the three modes of material nature, they become free from birth, death, old age, and their distresses, and they begin to enjoy nectar, amritam, even in this life. So we see that the search for happiness requires, first of all, the attempt for self-realization. Without that, there's no real happiness. It'll be happiness on the level of rajasic or tamasic activities. And rajasic activities begin like nectar and end up like poison and are related only to the temporary pleasure of the senses. And the tamasic activities are based on delusion, sleep, laziness, uncleanliness, and illusory pursuits. It's like there's a Spanish poet called Cervantes. He wrote the book Don Quixote. Don Quixote was a noble man in Spain, and he had a sidekick. So Don Quixote rode on a big, beautiful horse, and a sidekick rode on a donkey. And Don Quixote was always searching for the enemy. But in his delusional state, he thought the enemy were windmills. And every time he would see a windmill in the distance, he would say, oh, that's the enemy. And then he'd tell his sidekick, you know, okay, let's get ready to charge and kill the enemy. So they would ride toward the enemy, and he'd have his big spear like this, and they'd be, you know, screaming out, you know, whatever their battle cry is. But it was always an illusion. When they got to the enemy, it was a windmill. So he writes this story of Don Quixote, who's always fighting these mythical, illusory battles in his mind. But that's what, you know, happiness in the mode of ignorance is. People are engaged in all these delusional, dreamlike pursuits. And in the rajasic level, they're engaged in pleasing the senses as much as they can. But on the sattvic level, one is concerned with self-realization, understanding the difference between the body and the eternal soul, the temporary body and the eternal soul, and then understanding the difference between the individual, minute living entity, the jivatma, and paramatma, the supreme personality of Godhead. And then understanding that ete cham sakalak pumsa krishnastu bhagavan swayam, the source of both paramatma, jivatma, and the entire apara prakriti, the material nature, is Sri Krishna Bhagavan. So in this way, This search for self-realization raises one above the level of the three modes of material nature. Mam chayo vibhicharina bhakti yogena sevate sagunam samatitya itan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. When one engages in devotional service unflinchingly and does not fall down, at once such a person transcends the influence of the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. Brahman means that there's no more hankering or desiring material things for sense pleasure, and there's no more lamenting for sense pleasure that one has lost. So this Brahman level Bhaktya mam abhijananti yavanyas chasmi tatvata tatumam tatvato gyatva vishite tad anantaram. One can only achieve that level by unflinching devotional service without any material motive. And once one achieves that level, they are no longer influenced by the modes of material nature. On that level, they begin to experience transcendental pleasure. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. They become Prasanatma. Their mind, their senses, everything becomes very peaceful because they realize their eternal relationship with Krishna. And they become fully joyful. And one never laments or desires to have anything. And such a person is equally disposed to all living entities. In other words, they treat everyone with compassion. Or as it says, Matravat Paradaresu, Lostravat Paradravyesu, Atmavat Sarvabhutesu, Ya Pasyati Sapandita. Chanakya Pandit describes a really educated person. They see every woman except one's wife as mother. And conversely, a woman sees every man except her husband as his her father. And he sees others' wealth like pebbles in the street. In other words, it's worthless for him. He's not envious of anyone. And he treats everyone as he would want them to treat himself. He treats everyone as he would treat himself. In other words, he's equal to everyone. Vidyavinaya sampane bhamani gavi hastini sunichaiva swapakecha pandita samadarsina. He's pandit because he's samadarshi. He sees equally the presence of the eternal soul in the body of an ant, an elephant, a human being. And he sees the paramatma accompanying that individual soul. So he sees this equality of all living beings. He doesn't say, oh, this is an ant. That's a useless thing. I can kill it. No. Because he sees the jiva present in the body of the ant, and he sees Paramatma present. So there's respect for all life. So this is Atmavat Sarvabhutesu. He treats everyone equally as an eternal soul who has an eternal relationship with Krishna and a right to live and to achieve self-realization. And so that is a real pundit. So Krishna says, Tribhir Gunamayer Bhavir Ebi Arma Ebi Sarvamidam Jagat Mohita Nabijananti Mam Ebyam Param Avyayam. So he says that everyone in this world is delusional because of the influence of the three modes of material nature. And because of that, they do not know me, who am above the modes, and who am inexhaustible. Mam ebya param avyayam. So the whole world is enchanted by these three modes of nature. But those who are bewildered by these three modes, they cannot understand that transcendental to the material nature is the Supreme Lord, Krishna. They think Krishna is an ordinary person. And because of that, they don't take seriously Krishna's Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, as Prabhupada says in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita in the purport, says the Bhagavad Gita is the most perfect scripture in this universe. Most perfect scripture. Because, as it says, Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitam Idam Uttamam Pat Yakshavagamam Dharmam Susukam Kartam Avyam. This knowledge that Krishna gives Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita is the king of all knowledge, Rajavidya. Rajaguyam, the most sublime secret of all secrets. And it is Pratyaksha Vagamam Dharmam. It gives direct perception of the self. In other words, direct perception of the self means you understand perfectly your relationship to Krishna. We cannot have self-realization in a vacuum. It can only happen in a relational context with Krishna. And Prabhupada says, out of many standard and authoritative revealed scriptures, the Bhagavad Gita is the best. So this one book has all knowledge in it. The essence is the Veda Sar, the essence of all knowledge. Of course, Srimad Bhagavatam is an elaboration on the Bhagavad Gita. So it's expanded Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, it's the most perfect. It's the Amala Purana, the most perfect Vedic scripture. Already Bhagavad Gita is perfect because it's Shruti. It's spoken by Krishna. Therefore, there's no imperfection in it. And Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken about Krishna, it's Smriti, but it's an expansion of the Bhagavad Gita. And everything that's in a summary form of Bhagavad Gita is expanded beyond imagination in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Shadava labhate param jnanam tatpara samyatendriya jnanam ladva param santim achiren adigachati. He says, 4th chapter, 39th verse, a faithful man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses is eligible to achieve such knowledge, and having achieved it, he quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. And then the next verse is very important. It says, agyas chastradanasya samse atma vinasyati nayam lokasti na paro na sukam samse atmanaha. But ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness. They fall down. For the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. So, nayam lokasti na paro na sukam samse atmanaha. So, it's very important that we develop the taste to regularly hear and chant Bhagavad Gita. Just like tomorrow is Gita Jayanti, so we're going to chant the entire Bhagavad Gita. And all this week we're going to discuss Bhagavad Gita and chant separately two chapters, at least two or three chapters every day. But tomorrow we'll chant the entire Bhagavad Gita. So, we don't know what the platform of happiness is. That's why people are so unhappy in this world. People think that you perceive happiness through the senses. For example, a stone has no senses, therefore it cannot perceive happiness or distress. But a person who has developed consciousness, they can perceive happiness and distress more intensely than undeveloped consciousness. The stone... Matter is undeveloped consciousness. Spirit is developed consciousness. So stone is undeveloped consciousness. The wall is undeveloped consciousness. Therefore, it cannot perceive happiness and distress. But a human being can intensely feel happiness and distress because they have developed consciousness. So trees have consciousness, but it's not developed very much. It's developed more than a stone, but it's still very less. Therefore, trees can suffer tremendously. It's like it's freezing cold outside. The trees are there. In the winter, it can be scorching hot. The trees are there. So the tree's consciousness is very low. Therefore, it can tolerate intense heat, intense cold. But you and I, we would have a very difficult time tolerating. If we had to stand outside all night long in the freezing cold, we'd go crazy. Or if we had to sit in the scorching heat, we would go crazy. So, therefore, because we have developed consciousness, we feel things more acutely. So if a human being... So the conclusion is that every living being feels happiness or distress according to the degree of the development of consciousness. So, happiness that we experience in the material world is not real happiness. It's only a very low grade of happiness that's related to the temporary senses and the body. And if you ask a tree, are you feeling happy? It would probably say, yes, I'm happy standing here all year round. I'm enjoying the wind and the snow and the cold and the scorching heat very much. This, in a sense, may be enjoyment for the tree. But for the human being, it's a very low standard of enjoyment. We wouldn't accept that as enjoyment. Because the tree's consciousness is so low, it's, oh, I'm happy. Just like one time Indra was cursed by one of his gurus because he insulted the guru. He was cursed to become a pig, and he became a pig, and he had little piglets and a couple of pig wives, and he was eating stool and urine. And one day Brahma came to see him and said, Indra, look, the heavenly planets are in turmoil since you've not been doing your duty there. Please come back. We'll end this curse and you can come back. He said, no, I'm very satisfied. I'm very happy here. See, because very low grade of consciousness of the pig, he's happy eating stool. He's happy living outside, sometimes being beaten by human beings and kids, and eventually slaughtered and eaten. But he's happy. So there are different grades of living entities according to their consciousness. And their conceptions and perceptions of life, of happiness, are also of different types and grades. So the tree is enjoying the freezing cold and scorching heat. The pig is enjoying eating stool and living outside in squalor, right? And eventually being slaughtered. So he's thinking he's happy, but at the next moment, he may be slaughtered. He doesn't realize his danger. So there are different degrees of happiness. But the highest happiness, Krishna says, sukham aityantikam yatat buddhigrayam atendriyam veti yiyatra nachayivayam stitas chalati nityasaha. So he says, in the joyous state of samadhi, or total absorption in thinking of Krishna, that's what real samadhi is. You cannot get Krishna out of your mind. It's not blanked out, meditating on nothingness. That's not samadhi. Samadhi is total absorption of the mind in thinking of Krishna and serving Krishna. One is situated in boundless transcendental happiness and enjoys himself through transcendental senses. Established thus, one can never depart from the truth. Now, this is an example of what we call a priori truth. Now, we're going to give a demonstration of it. In this verse, it says that the self-realized person who's situated in samadhi is enjoying himself with transcendental senses. Now, watch what happens here. Prabhupada explains, of course, buddhi means intelligence. And one has to be intelligent if he wants to enjoy, right? Otherwise, we end up like the tree, enjoying the freezing cold, and that's not really enjoyment, right? Or become like the pig, enjoying eating stool. But that's not really enjoyment. It's because the consciousness is so low, the pig, he thinks it's enjoyment. But actually he's eating stool. How he could be attracted to such a thing is incomprehensible for a human being. But for the pig, he's smiling. So animals do not really have developed intelligence, so they can't enjoy life as a human being can. The hands, the nose, the eyes, the ears, all the sense organs and bodily parts may be present in a dead person, but he can't enjoy. He has the hands, the eyes, the ears, the nose, everything, but the soul is not there, so he can't enjoy the body. That means that the real enjoyer in the body are not the senses and not the body. That means the real enjoyer is the soul. Because when the soul is not present, the senses don't perceive anything. The body doesn't feel happiness or pain. Therefore, the real enjoyer in the body is the soul. It's not the body itself. Some people think it's the body that's enjoying. And that's a mistake. Okay, then, let's say we get the most beautiful woman in the world who's dead, and we give it to a man. Would he enjoy it? No. He would get rid of it, right? So, without the soul present in the body, there's no sense of enjoyment. So, if we think about it, the body doesn't really have any power on its own. Matter itself, without the presence of the soul, doesn't have any power perception of happiness and distress. It has nothing. So if you look a little further, you can understand that the body is not the enjoyer, but it's the soul that's the enjoyer. So sometimes people think they're enjoying bodily sense gratification, but it's not bodily sense gratification. The real enjoyer is the soul, the jivatma. And only the soul has the potency for enjoyment. The body has no potency for enjoyment. Okay, now, the enjoyment is not always manifest in the material body. Sometimes we enjoy in the mind, right? It has nothing to do with the body at that point. Well, the mind is a subtle body. But even that, you cannot enjoy unless the soul is present. Okay, now, if the soul is enjoying, then it must have senses also. Because the senses are the organs for satisfying one's desires. So, besides the material senses of the body, the soul also has senses. Eyes, ears, nose, and so forth. That's why you can enjoy. The senses are organs of enjoyment or suffering. So, and the Vedas say that the spirit soul, although atomic, is the actual enjoying agent. It's not possible to measure the soul, but that doesn't mean that it's without measurement. It's 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. So sometimes you see a little speck, but you put it under a microscope, you see it's a living entity that's moving very slowly, and it has a little body, right? One time, Prabhupada was giving a lecture, and he says, Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivisto matak smriti jnanam apahanam cha. This verse says, Krishna says, I am in the heart of every living entity. So one wise guy raised his hand and said, Prabhupada, you know, I studied in biology, and in our biology class, there are living entities that don't have a heart. He said, what? He said, yeah, like a worm doesn't have a heart or a circulatory system, and other living entities don't have hearts and circulatory systems. Prabhupada said, that's nonsense. He said, no, but we studied it. He said, you studied what? You hardly see anything. If Krishna says, Sarva Shichaham Hridi Sannivisto, I am present in everyone's heart, that means every living entity has a heart, whether you see it or you don't see it. You see? This is called a priori knowledge. The Vedic knowledge is a priori. It's existing before any perception of a human being and beyond the powers of perception of human beings. Right? But it's a fact. So, therefore, it's not possible to measure the soul, but that doesn't mean it doesn't have a measurement. It's just that our powers of perception are very limited. And even sometimes we see something that's no bigger than a little point. But when you look at it under a microscope, you see it has arms and legs and it's moving, right? Or it's something that's animated and alive. And has both length and width and so forth. So the soul has dimensions, but we can't perceive it. When we buy a suit or a dress, it's made to fit the body we have. In the same way, the spirit soul is not impersonal. It's actually a person. And God or Krishna is also a person. And the spirit spark, or the jivatma, is a fragmental part of Krishna. It's also a person. So, if you buy a coat or a dress or a pants and shirt and you cover your body with it, it has a form once you put it on because of the body, right? Like you can get certain, you know, very thin plastic raincoats, and you can wrap them up and they become like a little ball or a little rectangle like this. And then when you open it up, you put it on, it has sleeves and collar and buttons and everything, right? So in the same way, the soul has a body, and the material body we have has form because it's covering the form of the soul. It's not that the soul is formless, but unfortunately it's so small, we don't have the instruments to see it. That doesn't mean you can't see it. It just means that we don't have the instruments yet to see it. So the spirit soul must have a form because the body has the form. And Krishna is an actual person. Therefore, we're part and parcel of Krishna. That means we're also persons. If the Father is a person, the Son is a person. The Son's not a non-person. And if the Son is a person, that means the Father is a person. So Krishna is a person, and we are persons. He says, Sarva Yonisu Konteya Murtaya Sambhavantiya Tasam Brahma Mahadyunir Aham Bija Pradapita. He says, Sarva Yonisu Konteya. And I am the seed-giving father of all living entities. So every living entity is coming from him. Every living entity is an individual. The ant is an individual. The bee is an individual. The tree is an individual. And human beings are individuals. That means because we're part and parcel of Krishna, Mamayavamsa, Jiva Loka, Jiva Bhuta, Sanatana, and we're eternal, just like Krishna. If we're persons, that means Krishna's a person. Because Krishna's a person, that means we're persons, because we're coming from him. So, as sons of God, as children of God, we assert our individuality and our personality. And at the same time, how can we deny it to the Father? I mean, you have a father, right? Can you say your father is not a person? No. You have a father, right? Can you say he's not a person? No. So because we're persons, definitely Krishna is a person. Why do the Mayavadis say he's not a person? Because they're fools. Jai Shishirada Nilamada Bhakija. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Bhakti Srimati Bhakti Stesa Devi Guru Mani Pacharani Nirvisesa Sunyamani Paskati Yastra. So Sukham Ajyantikam Yattat Buddhigraham Atendriyam Veti Chaivayam Veti Yatra Na Chaivayam Stitas Chalati Tatvataha. So this atindriyam, sukham atyantikam yatat, buddhigrayam, atindriyam. Atindriyam means we have to transcend the material senses before we can appreciate real happiness. This is explained in the sixth verse of Bhagavad Gita, and sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Now, we're talking about happiness, how to attain and sustainable happiness. Well, we have to transcend the influence of the modes of material nature. And this low-grade happiness based on the material senses. We have to get to the high-grade happiness based on the spiritual senses of the soul. So, therefore, Krishna, it's also said in the Vedic literature, Ramante Yogino Nante Satyananda Chidatmani. The yogis who are aspiring after spiritual life, they're also tasting enjoyment, transcendental pleasure, by focusing on the super soul within the heart. Now, yogis, they give everything up, right? They live in a cave or out in the forest, right? But they're happy. Why are they happy? You take a materialist, you put him out in the forest with a lungi, he won't be happy. He said, where's my cell phone? I mean, there's no heat here, you know. Well, I got to go to the Whole Foods and buy some organic rice. You know, they're not going to be happy, right? But the yogi is happy and has nothing. Where is he deriving his happiness from? Sukham adyantikam yattat buddhigraham atindriyam. He's deriving happiness from his transcendental senses of his soul, perceiving the presence of Krishna in his heart. People, materialists, can't understand this. They have no way of understanding it. So, he's tasting enjoyment by focusing on the super soul within, or Krishna. And not only super soul, people like Sanjaya in the Bhagavad Gita, he's seeing Krishna directly. He's seeing And you go further, like Sukadev Goswami. He's saying Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna's pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan, right in his heart. He has an internal television. So, the yogis, who knows what they're seeing? They're seeing something. Maybe they're seeing Paramatma in the heart, and that's what's giving them pleasure. But the devotee is seeing Krishna's pastimes in his heart continually. When he reaches that pinnacle of devotional service and purification. So, therefore, what kind of pleasure is the yogi relishing if they're taking so much trouble of doing tapasya? That pleasure is ananta, endless. Why? Because the spirit soul is eternal and Paramatma is eternal. Therefore, the reciprocation of their loving exchanges are eternal. They're not temporary like in this world. So one who's actually intelligent will give up the temporary low-class sense gratification of with material senses and take up the transcendental pleasure, the sukham aitindriyam, the transcendental pleasure of Krishna consciousness. Always thinking of Krishna, meditating on his pastimes, chanting his holy names, engaging in devotional service. One participates in spiritual life with the Supreme Lord. This is called Rasa Leela. This is actually Rasa Leela, participating in spiritual life with the Supreme Lord. So that's what the pujari is doing. That's what we do when we chant kirtan. We offer it to the Lord, and we bring offerings for the Lord, and we bow down to the Lord. This is Rasa Leela. Rasa means taste of transcendental pastimes with the Lord. So, we've heard of Krishna's Rasa Leela with the cowherd girls in Vrindavan. Okay? That's not ordinary exchanges. That's not going to the bar and dancing. It's not like that. Between material bodies. It's an exchange of feelings through spiritual bodies with spiritual senses, purified spiritual senses. One has to be a little intelligent, buddhigrayam, atindriyam, in order to perceive this and understand it. For a fool, for a murkha, they can't understand this. They understand, you know, they have baseball hats on backwards, they're eating a hot dog and drinking Budweiser and watching football. They don't understand anything. Right. Okay. So, real happiness, you can achieve it anywhere, in the material world or the spiritual. It's not that you can only perceive it in the spiritual world. You can perceive it right now, here. We are perceiving it. And you get better and better at perceiving it as you purify the senses and the mind of the three doors to hell. Kama, Krodha, and Lobha. When these things are purified, lust, anger, and greed, then you begin to perceive transcendental happiness. Right. So, there was a man once in India. He didn't know what sugar cane was. You know, you have the cane. He didn't know what it was. So, he asked someone, what's sugar cane? He said, oh, it looks like bamboo. He said, oh, bamboo, I know what bamboo is. So he found some bamboo, right? And he cut it, and he started chewing on it. But there was no sweetness, right? So that's what material sense gratification is. We mistake it for being sugar cane, but when we actually chew it, there's no taste. It's tasteless. You know, at the beginning, we think there's something there, but then very soon we realize this is not sweet, it's actually poison. So it looks like bamboo, but it's not a bamboo, right? You have to know the difference between sugar cane and bamboo. So foolish people, they chew all kinds of bamboo rods. So how can they experience the sweetness of sugar cane when they're chewing on bamboo? It's not possible. So we're trying to get happiness and pleasure through the material senses by chewing the material body, but there's no happiness there. Yes, there's stool, there's urine, there's mucus, there's bile, there's blood, right? Just like in Sankhya Yoga, Sankhya Yoga is all about losing your attraction to material life by analyzing it into its 24 fundamental elements, right? So let's say there's a very beautiful woman, right? So you take the woman, you put her on the table, right? And you dissect her, you cut, make a big slit from her throat down to her belly button, you open it up, and then out comes the intestines and the liver and the gallbladder and the stomach. So all of a sudden something happened, you know, when she was standing there, the high heels and everything, she looked very beautiful. But now you open her up, you take out all this stuff, you say, well, wait a minute, that beauty is only skin deep. Inside is of a man or a woman is stool, urine, mucus, bile, blood, and wax, and tears, and saliva, and bugs, and, you know. So immediately, when you analyze down to the fundamental elements, bhumir, apo, nalo, vayu, kam, mano, buddhireva, you lose your attraction to it. That's what Sankhya Yoga is, being able to analyze like that. Say. But Krishna consciousness is a little different. We engage everything in Krishna's service, and by doing that, you lose kama, krodha, and lobha. So therefore, you don't have to dissect people to lose your attraction to sense gratification. You engage everyone in Krishna's service, including yourself, and you lose that false sense of seeking happiness through the gratification of the senses. By engaging the material senses in the service of Krishna's senses. We all try and please Krishna's senses by offering him nice flowers and nice incense and nice food. So when Krishna's senses are satisfied, our senses will be satisfied, and our material senses become purified, and our spiritual senses begin to act and perceive. So it's a different system. Sankhya Yoga is one system, but it's messy, right? Just like you want to have gurban. You know, gurban means you get the goat, you know, and you say, Bismillah, Rahim, so forth, you know, like that. And all of a sudden the blood comes out, and then you have to cut it open, and all the guts come out, and the stool, right? You have to clean all that stuff. It's all nasty stuff. And finally, you end up with the carcass with the ribs and the legs and everything, and, you know, you make your kebab. But it's a messy job. So that Sankhya Yoga is like that. It's a very messy job. It's not that pretty, right? But Bhakti Yoga is all beautiful because everyone is originally a devotee of Krishna. They just covered over. So when you purify that covering through devotional service, then you see how beautiful they are. But the beauty is not based on sense gratification. It's based on bhakti, pure love for Krishna. So becoming situated in real happiness is the process of Krishna consciousness. By Krishna consciousness, we gradually become developed in our intelligence, and naturally we enjoy and relish spiritual happiness as we make spiritual progress. We begin to relish spiritual happiness as we proportionately give up material attachments and material low-class happiness. And we make progress by understanding who Krishna is. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchit Ananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda, Sarvakarana Karanam. He's the cause of all causes. He's the original person. He's the origin of everything. And he's extremely beautiful. Sundar, Sundarananda, right? Shama Sundar, right? It's most beautiful. And as we make progress understanding Krishna, we become detached from false happiness. And we get promoted to this stage of Krishna consciousness. And what is that? Yam ladva chaparam labam. Manyate nadikam tata, yasmin stito nachalate, yasmin stito nagukdukena, Gurunapi Vichalate. What is that? When you gain this Krishna consciousness, this ability to see Krishna, hear Krishna, taste Krishna, and serve Krishna, then you think there's nothing greater than this. Even if someone gives me millions of dollars or billions of dollars, it doesn't compare to this. Billions of dollars is nothing compared to the happiness one achieves in Krishna consciousness by perceiving Krishna. And being situated in this position, one's never shaken. One doesn't say, oh, what's going to happen? Oh, there's no money in the bank. Oh, no. Well, you're not worried because you know Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? And even in the worst situations, the most difficult situation, one's not worried. Why? Because we're attached to Krishna. No one can take Krishna away from you. If you're attached to your car, someone can steal your car and then you lament. If you're attached to the money, you might lose your money and you have nothing. If you're attached to the house might burn down. Then you don't have a house. Right? But when you're attached to Krishna, no one can take Krishna away from you. And Krishna never leaves you. So when one attains that stage, everything else seems insignificant. Because this is so great, so wonderful. So that's just a few points tonight. This is teaches us how to attain real happiness and what is the platform of real happiness. So, are there any questions? Yeah. Yeah.
So once we are getting progress in our spiritual life, we start to enjoy the spiritual senses. Is it the spiritual form is developing in the material body itself, or how do you feel how do you feel the spiritual pleasure?
Because Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, you become Prasanatma, completely satisfied. Because na sochiti na kankshati, no more hankering, no more lamenting for material things. Samak sarva subhute, so and you're equal with everyone. You treat everyone as an eternal spirit soul and it has an eternal relationship with Krishna. So Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, na sochiti na kankshati. Samak sarva subhute, so mad bhaktim labhate param. You rise above the influence of the modes of material nature, then your soul begins to act. Before that, the soul was a passive passenger in the body. Now it begins to act with its spiritual senses. Then you begin to perceive in your heart Krishna's transcendental pastimes. You don't have to go pay, $20 to watch a movie anymore. It's going on right in your heart. Just like Sanjaya is seeing. What does Sanjaya say at the end of the Bhagavad Gita? He says, my hair is standing on end, hearing this discussion between Krishna and Arjuna. You can just imagine. He says, O Raja, O Dhritarashtra, as I repeatedly recall this wondrous and holy dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, I take pleasure being thrilled at every moment. O King, as I remember the wonderful form of Lord Krishna, I am struck with wonder more and more, and I rejoice again and again. You see? He's overwhelmed. He says, by the mercy of Vyasa, I have heard these most confidential talks directly from the master of all mysticism, Krishna, who is speaking personally to Arjuna. He says, Sanjaya said, thus have I heard the conversation of two great souls, Krishna and Arjuna. And so wonderful is that message that my hair is standing on end. All right? That you think he wants to go to a bar and drink a martini and talk to someone who's blowing smoke in his face? And he calls that pleasure? No way. This is so far beyond that. See? We don't really understand what happiness is. We're like the tree. We think, oh, I'm happy freezing in the middle of the night in winter. Right? But that's a low-grade happiness. You have to have such low consciousness to call that happiness. Right? We don't know enough about Krishna. That's why we're not like thrilled to just run to the class. I want to learn something tonight. You know, I can't live without this. You know, just like a drug addict, right? I got to have a fix, man. I got to have what? You become like that. Every day I got to have a fix, you know. But the fix is not a drug, you know. The fix is learning more about Krishna. Because the more you learn about Krishna, the more you love him. And the more you love Prabhupada for giving us all this knowledge, right? So we're addicted to Krishna Katha. That means you're liberated. Wouldn't you say Maharaj Parikshit was addicted to Krishna Katha? Yeah, he stopped eating and sleeping. Right? He lost all interest in eating and sleeping. He just listened and asked questions. And more he was in ecstasy. This is a spiritual process. We don't really understand what happiness is. We're in such a low grade of consciousness, we don't understand. But the possibility is there if we want to rise above the modes of material nature and begin to relish this transcendental pleasure. Hari Bol. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.